Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant! Bale going around and scoring for Tottenham!
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run! He scored! And he's away, Aaron Lennon! Crouch! Yes!
Welcome back to another edition of the all-new All-442 Wheeler Dealer Radio. I am your host, Skipjack, otherwise known as Greg, and I am joined tonight by two of Cartilage Free Captain's finest. First, we've got Supermark and huge wrestling fan, Lennon's Eyebrow. Ben, say hi to the people.
I'm hanging up. I told you I wasn't participating in this.
Oh, okay.
If you made any references to wrestling.
Did you enjoy WrestleMania this year?
I hate you.
And once again, from the moderator's table, we've got Uncle Menno. Dustin, say hello to the people.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be here. And my favorite wrestler is still to this day Leaping Lanny Poffo.
Also known as Macho Man Randy Savage's brother. So for you,
correct,
for you non-wrestling nerds out there, which is most of you. Now let's get away from that topic before we lose one of our hosts and go straight into Spurs. Hey, this week we didn't lose, and we actually beat someone by a comfortable margin. That was pretty fun, right, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as fun as you would expect a 5-1 victory to really be. We had, you know, our kind of classic slow start where we can't do anything for the first 30 minutes of the game, and we concede a stupid goal because our players do stupid things. We gave Lee Cattermole his first goal in 100-plus appearances at Sunderland.
I think so. I saw a stat. Was it 160-something fouls per goal for him?
Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Yeah,
like
that sounds
37
right.
Red cards per goal.
Oh, God.
So, Vlad Kirakesh, pat yourself on the back for that one. But, yeah, I mean, we clawed our way back into the game, basically on the back of Christian Eriksen being better than everybody else on the pitch. And by the time we went up 2-1, you know, it just felt like with 10 minutes to go in the game, Sunderland just sort of gave up. And the next three goals came pretty easily. So, yeah, it worked. We won.
It was amazing to me because you're right. That was a pretty nervy game. But it felt like as soon as we scored our go-ahead goal, like, it just sort of turned into a dumpster fucking after that. Like, I mean, it really did. It felt like Sunderland just gave up and bent over as soon as we went ahead. Whereas they'd, like, I don't know if we weren't clicking or they weren't, but, I mean, they didn't look great or anything. But it got so much worse as soon as we went ahead.
I mean, that's been the story of Sunderland this season is, you know, they played Man City really tight in the first half. They got that early goal from Barini. And then once Man City started turning the screws, Sunderland just fell apart. And the same thing happened against Liverpool, and the same thing happened against us.
You know, I should preface my comments by saying that I really don't have anything really against Sunderland. I don't hate them. I don't love them. I think, you know, I would much. There are teams I'd rather see go down instead of them. But this, honestly, by the end of the game, it felt a bit like kicking a puppy. I almost felt bad. Now, I mean, we haven't thrashed a team like that since, well, I don't know, the first leg of the Inter, you know, a few years ago. Newcastle. Okay, well, we thrashed Newcastle. But, I mean, this really felt like just an absolute, you know, shit-kicking. And by the end of it, I actually started to feel bad for Newcastle or for Sunderland. Just because they looked so awful by the end. You could just see them deflate. After that, I think after the third goal that we scored, you could just see the air go out of them. And by the end, they just didn't care. They just wanted to get the game over with and go home and just slink back to the championship and start over. Well, I really felt bad for them. But, I mean, it was if you take away the first, you know, 20 minutes of the match, we really played a pretty good game, and that felt good to see. And it was kind of gratifying to finally put the screws to another team and really feel, especially at home, and really do well for once.
There's two things in there I want to unpack. The first is, I don't know if you guys follow Jonathan Wilson from The Guardian on Twitter, but because of him, and if you follow the other football journalists, you see a lot of conversations involving him. He's a Sunderland fan, and I was seeing a lot of interesting comments about how, like, they've seen worse Sunderland teams. They've seen better Sunderland teams, but they've never seen a Sunderland team as gutless. And he's like, it was interesting to watch them talk about it because he's like, they're not so abject that they're only going to get like, you know, 15 points or whatever that Derby team got a few years ago. They're better than that, but not much better. And it's just like, it's like you guys were saying, it's like they just give up and have, like, as Tim Sherwood would say, no character. But it is kind of pathetic to watch. Like, you don't see many teams that – honestly, actually, the Newcastle game reminded me a lot of that, where a team just was sort of flat, uninspired, didn't really seem to care. But it, you don't seem to see a game like that that often, I feel like.
No, I don't think you do. And, you know, I was in my role as a Q&A guy for the site. You know, I get to encounter a lot of the opposing bloggers from other teams, especially the SB Nation guys. And they're all, I mean, all of them are super nice, and I really enjoy doing that for the site. But it also means they get to know some of these guys a little bit. And, that, you know, I follow them on Twitter, and, you know, we have some exchanges on Twitter and social media. And so I was following Roker Report during the match, and you could just, from the comments that came through, they – you know, it was just, it was depressing. I really, you know, I don't dislike Sunderland. They're playing crap football, but they don't seem like they should be as bad as they are. So I don't know. I wish they were better. I wish they kind of would have put up a little bit more of a fight and then we kicked their butt 5-1. Because at least then
They did put up a decent fight and, you know, they started off winning the game, and it very well could have gone the other way for Spurs for a while there. I mean, ultimately, the talent won out. But, I mean, for most of the game, Sunderland was there to play until it became apparent that there was nothing to be gained from it, and then they just switched off.
Well, here's some food for thought. We all, when Paolo Di Canio was ranting about how there was no fight, no heart in this team, we all dismissed it as the rantings of a crazy Italian fascist. There, after watching that game, I'm not so sure if there wasn't something to what he was saying. Certainly, he would have to bear some of the blame for that. He put a lot of this team together. Sunderland gave him they spent, what, 13 on Jozy Altidore, who didn't even make the bench, and he's healthy. But they spent $13 million on him alone. And they brought in some – they had decent investment, so he's to blame. But he might not have been totally off. That did not look like a team with a lot of fight.
There's a lot of rumors that there's a lot of problems in their clubhouse culture. There's a lot of guys who are there for a paycheck, a lot of guys who really like a pint and aren't so much there for the football and could give a shit what happens to Sunderland. So I think to an extent that is certainly true. I mean, there's a lot of guys that I think Gus Poyet will stick around.
Poyet.
I think he's a good manager. And I hope he gets a chance to, you know, cut the dead weight from the squad.
I think he's going to have to cut the dead weight from the squad because I think there's about 8 players who'll be out of contract.
Going to have to. I'm just saying I hope Gus gets the chance to because I think he's a good manager and I think he'll be able to bring them back up, you know, if not next year, then the year after.
It looked like for a while there he might keep them up, but
I think the Roker Report guys, we're all pretty, you know, they like Gus a lot, and I think they should. I think he's a good manager.
Gus? He's a great guy. He played for some great teams.
Including us, right.
Mostly
but, you
us,
know,
but
I think there are two things that are going on. I mean, this is turning into the Sunderland podcast, which is not a good place to go, I think. But there are two things, I think, going on with Sunderland right now. The first is that Di Canio was an absolute idiot. And I think he put them in a hole that was almost impossible for them to dig out of, even, you know, unless they would, you know, hire Harry Redknapp, right? That's one thing. And also, I kind of want to defend Jozy a little bit because I think Altidore's – Well, look.
I didn't bring mechanic on this podcast for a reason.
I am not mechanic, but I do think that Josie's not as crap as what he's showing right now, and I think it's because Sunderland isn't set up to play to his strengths. He's not getting the kind of service that he would normally get, even with the U.S. men's national team. He thrived in the system at AZ, you know, in Holland because they were set up to feed him, and I don't think he's getting that level of service. And he's been crap, and I mean, there's no getting around that he's not played well, but I don't think he's as complete and utter abject terrible as what a lot of Sunderland fans would make him out to be. So that's all I'm going to say on Jozy. I want him to be good. I don't think he's as bad as what he probably looks like at the moment.
Well, it's been a great episode of Wheeler Dealer Roker. Well, let's move on back to the team that we all love, despite logic and reason, Spurs. So this game, to me, led some credence. We've talked about this before on the podcast. We've talked about it on the site. There's a debate between, is this team fundamentally broken, or is the manager just – has the system and manager been screwed up all year? And this game, to me, lent more credence to the theory that – it wouldn't take much for a good manager to get something out of these players. I know Sunderland are really bad, so that 5-1 is probably a little flattering to Spurs. But, I mean, that was some there were some impressive performances in that game, particularly Christian Eriksen, who looked incredible, despite being played out of position. Just looked great in that game, especially once he got off the left and just started moving around all over the field. Great crosses, great balls, you know, had a nice goal for himself, I believe. It was just, he's so good. He's so, so good. I remember earlier in the year when the Spurs fans came up with that Eriksen song that joked about making Ozil look like shite. And I know on the site a bunch of us were like, oh, Spurs fans are delusional for thinking that. And at first it looked like we were. But nowadays I'm not so sure that song isn't pretty accurate. What are your thoughts about Christian Eriksen and who wants to have his babies more? Dustin.
Okay. Well, Christian Eriksen was absolutely phenomenal. I mean, no question. And you could really see that just how creative a player he is and what kind of an ability he brings to the team, especially when he moved into that free role. Because he was just all over the pitch. He was finding gaps in space. He was, bringing people into play. I thought it was the best game I've seen him play for Spurs. And he's had some pretty good games. The Ozil comparison, it's been a while since we've seen Mesut Ozil play. I think it's a little unfair.
Well, it's been longer since we've seen him play well.
Well, that's true. And I'm not sure how much of that is, I don't know, maybe it's Ozil. I don't know. I'm a little hesitant to say that Eriksen might be better than Ozil at this point, considering Ozil's history and what we know he can do and what he has done at Real Madrid. Eriksen's pretty darn well up there. He looked really good, and I would certainly say he would be at Ozil's level at the very least.
He's 21, you guys. Just think about that. He's 21. Ben, how much do you want to have his babies?
All the babies. So, a couple things. I think it's definitely we can say that Eriksen's relative value to Spurs versus Ozil's value to Arsenal, it's not even the same level. Eriksen has been central to everything good Spurs have done this season. And he's been immense for us in a way that Ozil really hasn't to the same degree at Arsenal, even when he was very good. But I also think in Ozil's defense is... You know, Eriksen's the kind of guy who puts himself in the box and will score goals and things like that, whereas Ozil is really the kind of guy who ghosts into space, finds the ball, and picks out that beautiful pass. And losing Walcott and Ramsey, I think, really hurt his ability to be effective because he lost the guys who would sort of orbit around him and make those runs for him to pick out. And so...
Ben, why do you have to ruin this for me, okay?
I'm not.
You're ruining this for me.
But to Eriksen's credit, I think we've, you know, not had anybody doing shit like that all year. And he said, I don't give a fuck. I'm Christian Eriksen, and just ran the show. And so I think, you know, maybe next year with a healthy Arsenal, Ozil could have a bigger year than Eriksen. But on his own merits, I think Eriksen has definitely had the better season.
Well, and the crazy thing is that Eriksen is doing what he's doing here when he's being played out of position. I mean, Tim Sherwood's continuing insistence on playing him wide left continues to boggle my mind. I don't understand why we don't just play him as a number 10, because he drifts in there all the time anyway. He might as well be there. So why give up the pretense? All we're doing really is sacrificing width on the left side to accommodate Eriksen cutting in.
I'll tell you why Sherwood does it. It's because he delivers a really nice cross. Like a very nice cross.
Yeah, between him and – I mean, he and Soldado are probably the best crossers on our team. And unfortunately, they're the two guys you'd want in the middle and not the guys crossing the ball. But, I mean, if we play this slavish devotion to a bunch of crosses into the box, then Eriksen on the left is a good option because he has such good delivery. I'd also think that this game was perfectly suited to Eriksen playing on the left for a couple of reasons. We saw against Liverpool that first goal where Glenn Johnson overlapped and Eriksen was nowhere to be found to track him, and they scored that goal pretty easily. But Sunderland, with their back three, they had Phil Bardsley playing as a wing back. And so that meant he was basically the only guy out wide providing width up and down the pitch. So on defense, that meant Danny Rose could track Phil Bardsley, and Eriksen didn't really have anyone that he really needed to mark out wide. And then on the flip side of that was it also gave Eriksen a lot of space on the left in attack, because Rose would make his overlapping runs wide and Bardsley would have to focus on him, and Eriksen was left in a ton of space to just sort of float around and get into position. You know, so yes, Sherwood's insistence on playing Eriksen on the left worked really well this game, but considering that he's played Eriksen on the left when it doesn't work, I'm not really inclined to give Sherwood much credit for that. It just seems to be a fortuitous coincidence of the thing that Sherwood always does, regardless of opposition, happened to match up against opposition really favorably this time.
Well, yeah. So I think Eriksen is actually sort of demonstrates sort of Sherwood's regime in a nutshell. Like, I think we're certainly getting more results than we were under AVB, or at least we're getting more goals than we were under AVB. And I think it's because he's freeing these guys up and letting them attack, and they're not in their rigid positions. We've talked about this before. And they're talented enough that if you just tell them to go out there and play, they're going to come up with some stuff. And when you're playing mediocre to bad teams, they're good enough to beat them and maybe even hammer them, like we saw this week. But when you play your Chelsea's, your Liverpool's, your City's, your, depending on when you catch them, Arsenal's, it's just we get caught out. We don't look good. And I think that just sums up Sherwood's regime. The only two quality teams he's really done a job against is we probably should have beat Arsenal in that one game we played against them. And Everton, which we, you know, got lucky, but it's still, we weren't conceding 20 to Everton. So,
yeah, I think that's definitely accurate. If you look at our record against the bad teams, we're 18-4-3 against the not top four, and we're 0-1-7 against the top four. And so it's clearly a case of we have good talent, they have bad talent, good talent wins. But when we play against a team that has good talent and a good tactical plan, our good talent is not enough to overcome those deficiencies.
Yeah, clearly. And I think part of that also has something to do with the stratification of the EPL this year. If you look at the table, I mean, there's a one or two team mid table this year. So you have, four or five teams that are really good. You've got a few teams that are good. You've got a couple of mid table teams and everybody else is crap. So what that tells me is that, a lot of the mediocre teams have kind of, and the bad teams have regressed. The good teams have for the most part gotten better. And so you've got this really strong break between the top of the table and the bottom of the table, where a lot of teams are either really good or they're crap. So it's become a little bit easier to take points off the bottom half of the table for most of the clubs this year. And it's become a lot harder to take the points from the top of the table. That doesn't excuse the fact that Spurs are still, you know, 0 and whatever for against the top four. I think it does lead to kind of an interesting climate in the EPL this year, where the good teams have gotten better and the bad teams have gotten worse. And that's maybe why we're still kind of hanging around fifth place at the moment.
I don't know. I think the EPL is what it's always been. Some teams have improved at the top, but I don't think it's that different than it usually is. You know, Everton's having a good year. You know, Liverpool's just having... I mean, you know, I could point to three or four games that Liverpool should have lost around New Year's. Stoke City probably being the worst example of the bunch, or the most blatant example of the bunch. I think it's like this every year. You've seen some shifting around at the top. Everton's having a better year than usual. We're having a worse year than we've had in recent years. I just think this is the Premier League. This is the time of year where the mid-table teams slump off a little bit. The relegation race isn't super deep from what I can remember. I just feel like it's always this way.
I don't know. I think Everton and Liverpool are much better than they have been in recent years.
Yeah,
and,
well,
you know,
yes.
We're worse and Man United are worse. But there's still a clear seven teams that are much better than the rest of the league.
Which is what it's always been.
But it's not. It's usually been, you know, four teams are really good, and then a couple teams are trying hard, and then there's a mid-table, and then there's some really bad teams. And I think now it's sort of stratified a little more where there's seven kind of top-ish teams, and instead of having, you know, the fifth and sixth place teams not really threatening for fourth place at all but still being better, now we have that with, you know, Southampton and Newcastle in seventh and eighth, or eighth and ninth. So I think the top half of this table has gotten a lot stronger across the board than we've seen in recent seasons.
We'll see. The thing that strikes me the most about the table this year is I don't know how much is sustained. I don't know how much you can read into it in terms of trends. Like, Spurs are having such a weird year. Like, we could keep getting worse. We could just be like that Liverpool team a few years ago under Kenny that was just ready to explode once they got a real manager and some, you know, I think this Liverpool team probably plays a lot better a lot sooner if Suarez isn't getting suspended left and right. You know,
well, Michael Kaley would probably agree with you. I think he said that Liverpool played really well last year. They just didn't finish.
Why we have a Liverpool and a United fan on the site, I'll never quite understand. But you've got that. You've got Liverpool, who just, as good as they are, and they're good, like, nothing has – I feel like nothing's gone wrong for them this year. And I know we were talking about this in the writers' room, and everyone was bringing up how many games Suarez missed at the beginning of the year. But I just
and how many own goals Colo Torre has scored.
Well, but that's, like, that's not unforeseen. I mean, you bring in Colo Torre, you deserve what you get. But I feel like nothing – like, they haven't had anything go really – like, they haven't had that one result where they just got screwed. You know, they beat United off a ball going off Sturridge's neck. I mean, anyway. So I don't know. That's the Chelsea's probably sustainable. Is United going to be this bad next year? Probably, if they keep Moyes. But I just feel like this is such a weird year of shifting. Like, is Everton going to be able to keep this up? Because I don't think anyone's loaning them a player of Lukaku's quality. Can they keep Lukaku? You know, who knows? It's a weird year in the EPL. Next year, I think it's going to be a very strange year because I don't think it's going to be hard to tell who's going to be able to sustain it, their patterns of this season.
Yep. I agree.
Good call, guys. Good call. Was there anything else from the Sunderland game? Any conclusions you would draw other than Vlad Kirikec does lots of cocaine before every match?
Harry Kane really looked good. Harry Kane looked really good. I was really – I mean, when the lineup came out and, you know, we were playing two up top against three in the back, you know, for Sunderland, I was like, what the shit, Tim? You know, what's going on? But, you know, I thought Kane had a really nice match. He's really kind of coming into himself, I think, in this season now that he's starting to get actually some game time.
Well, this is the first game where I feel like Kane has done what all the sort of youth team watchers say he does. Like, I feel like other times – he's had a couple decent sub-appearances, but I feel like generally – I don't know if we've starred him once or twice, but we've played him once or twice, and it just feels like he becomes anonymous. But today, I think, you know, that sort of moving around, making a nuisance of himself, getting into dangerous positions. You know, today was the first time I feel like he did what everyone says Harry Kane does, which is weird considering he's a time traveler, so he should know – what positions to be in, but we don't know where this Harry Kane is on his own personal timeline. So I guess I should be kind to him on that. But
I'm starting to doubt your hypothesis because if he were really a time traveler, I don't think he would have put himself in a position to get a head injury during the match.
Well, he just wanted to look like a proper hard man. So
I was happy with Kane. Well, go ahead, Ben. I was going to say that, you know, Kane looked,
Able. Is that what you were trying to say?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Boo. Go ahead.
Yeah, he was a little wayward with his finishing, but I mean,
he plays
whatever. He's 20 years old. Like, was this his first start in the Premier League?
I think
as
so,
a striker.
Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, whatever. I give him a pass. I'm sure he was nervous and, you know, inexperienced, and that'll come. And yes, you're right. We're notoriously bad at finishing. But he got into great positions. He moved around well. He passed the ball well. I will say I don't know if I love him and Adebayor as a pairing because they both kind of tend to wander. I mean, there's times during the game when Adebayor was the deepest person in midfield dictating play.
He tends to do Harry, that sometimes. I feel like he did that under Harry sometimes.
Yeah, that's
he does, because he gets frustrated and he goes looking for the ball. But Harry Kane also kind of roams, and we're left a lot of times with nobody in the box.
Didn't Kane kind of come up as like an attacking midfielder sort of too? I mean, he loves to drop back and kind of play in the hole and play off of a more forward striker. So, I mean, I think you're right. I think probably playing Kane off of Soldado might be the better partnership because both Adebayor and Kane tend to like to do the same kinds of things when they're on the pitch.
Yeah. I agree completely, and I hope Soldado comes back, and we got to see that at least once before the end of the year to see what we have.
I don't know.
Yeah, but this gives me hope.
Like much more of like a. I just feel like playing him by himself up there works a lot better. I mean, I know Soldado is very good at bringing other people into play. So maybe if we play him more as a central attacking midfielder, I'd be fine with that. But you know, when we put Soldado in, I don't like throwing two strikers up there, especially because if it's a good team, which we're not going to play for the rest of the year. I don't like playing two strikers against them. So,
but this does make me want to see more of Kane, and I think that this gives me hope that he's going to turn to a player that could be, if not a star, a serviceable striker for us, and you know, a good second or third option off the bench. You know, if Soldado is off the boil or whoever, if we bring somebody in, if they're not doing well. I don't think he's good enough that he's going to be an out-and-out starter for us, at least not yet. But, you know, he's showing glimpses that he could be a serviceable option for us. And so I think it's worth keeping him around.
One other thing from the Sunderland match. What do we think of the Nasser Chadli midfield experiment? Do you think he's actually suited to that role, or if that was just a case of Sunderland not really pressing in the midfield or doing anything? So Chadli was able to do whatever.
I think it's that. I think he's serviceable, and I think it's a nice trick you can play during a game to like okay, Christian and Nasser, like swap out for a few minutes. Like, I think it's a good trick to have in your up your sleeve. But most of his standout performances this year against some not awful teams have been on the wing. I'm thinking particularly Benfica. Who knows how much that's Benfica just switching off, but. You know, I don't know. It's not something I want to see with any regularity. Sunderland is really bad.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not the most tactically astute member of the masthead here. I'm no Michael Kaley or Brett Rainbows, but I totally did not get it. Starting Chadli as a central midfielder, I didn't understand why we would even want to try that. I mean, it worked, but Sunderland were bad, and Chadli was able to kind of impose himself because Sunderland are bad. But I don't want to see that against anything even remotely resembling a good team.
I guess we're all in agreement there.
Man, we need to disagree more, you guys. So, Sunderland's out of the way. Next week, we have West Bromwich Albion. Bromwich Albion. I don't know. British words are hard. Are we worried about this at all?
I think
Go ahead.
I think they're definitely a better side than Sunderland, and they are still in the relegation mix, so they have something to play for. They haven't really gotten results under Pepe Mel. I think they have two wins now in nine, 10 games.
Was he there when we drew against them?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Yes, I think so.
That was his first game. God, that okay. Sucked. That game was awful.
So, right. And then we also remember how bad that went. So I think there's definitely reasons to be concerned. We definitely need to show up. We should certainly win. We're a much better side. But, you know, they've caused teams problems this year. They have good, talented players.
The trick for this game, I feel like, is going to be the trick against all these sort of teams, which is we need to score relatively early. I mean, you know, open them up a little bit. I know that's simple, but we don't seem to do it enough, and we need to keep them from really bunkering down. With the way Eriksen's playing, you'd like to think we cut them open a little bit. But, you know,
well, I mean, I think West Brom might actually come out and try to play with us here because they need the points. If they lose, I think they're in trouble with relegation. So I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of bunkering coming from them, especially playing at home. I think they're probably going to try to take the game to us, and that might play into our favor as long as we don't, you know, start, you know, making stupid mistakes back in the back line like we seem to be doing every match these days. West Brom's a decent side. I don't think they're abjectly terrible, but they're in the relegation danger zone for a reason. So, meh.
I like that we all think we should beat them, but none of us want to commit to it because Spurs. Maybe my hope is they're going to throw the game to us to apologize for Nicholas Anelka's anti-Semitism. And maybe we will, get by on that and we won't even have to play, but probably not. Moving on, the Daily Mail and TalkSport have had various rumors this week about Spurs manager's job. Right before the Sunderland game, the media was reporting that, Sherwood had been told that he will not be kept on next year. And then on the flip side, TalkSport was reporting today that within 48 hours, Spurs are going to announce LVG as our manager next year. Ben, what do you think about these rumors? Let's start with Sherwood being told that he's not coming back next year. You think there's any veracity to them?
It's entirely possible. I mean, you know, I think we talked about this last time, but, you know, with Man U looking for possibly a new manager, with Arsenal maybe looking for a new manager, I could see Levy getting a little nervous that if LVG is our first choice guy, he doesn't want him to go somewhere else. And I think that happened when we were looking heavily at Brendan Rodgers and Liverpool snapped him up first, and then we fired Harry and brought in AVB. And so I think he'd be very concerned about having that happen again. And if there are teams like Arsenal or Man U who are looking for a manager, they're probably a more attractive destination than we are. So if that's the case and if he's nervous, I can totally see him saying, Sherwood, you're done. LVG is coming in. And I wouldn't fault him for that.
No, I wouldn't either. I think if you look at the situation that we're in right now, I would certainly hope that we're not going to be retaining Tim Sherwood on past this summer, because I think he's just not a good fit. You know, maybe he'll be fine somewhere else. Who knows? He could develop into a very good manager for all I know, but he's not a good fit for us now. The timing is always dangerous when you look into hire a manager, especially one that you know won't be coming before the World Cup. So maybe Levy is trying to, you know, lock things down. And plus, you know, the fourth place is kind of out of our reach at this point. We're not really – we don't have a whole lot to play for anymore. I don't think knowing this information, if it's true, it's maybe not going to affect the players all that much. In fact, for some of them, it might even be a relief that they know that Sherwood's not going to be around, so that, you know, they can maybe make some decisions on whether or not they want to continue to play for Spurs next year or not. Could be. I don't know. I would like to think it's true.
I think it's the media putting two and two together. The only thing that convinces me other than that is the fact that Sherwood was a little more circumspect about it when he was being asked about it. Like, just, oh, well, you have to talk to the chairman. He was saying stuff like that. I think it's entirely – like you guys say, I think it's entirely possible this has happened. I would be surprised if we actually said something to Sherwood by the end of the year, if only because you would want Sherwood to have authority within the locker room. Obviously, you're not going to commit to him and give that kind of authority, but, you know. I think the LVG stuff, again, I think it's the media. We don't know with the British media, which always frustrates me because they never cite sources or quotes. And so they're all like, there are various times where people are going off of conversations and they know things. And I think it was, David Heitner or Hunter, I can't remember how to pronounce his name, but at The Guardian was actually pretty accurate on AVB getting fired, but he was just reporting it like conjecture when he clearly was speaking to someone at Spurs. So who knows? My guess is this is all probably happening, but that doesn't mean that the media knows for a fact that it's happening, if you get my drift, and that they're just guessing.
Well, I don't think Sherwood necessarily would even say, even if it's true, I don't think Sherwood would probably even come out and say, yeah, it's true, I'm gone at the end of the season.
Well, of course not.
But we have seen Sherwood before say, you know, I've got an 18-month contract, I'm planning for the summer, I'm in charge of transfers, and have been very emphatic about his role as not a caretaker manager. And I think, Greg, you're right that his comments this time have been a little less emphatic about his future. So it's possible that something's
up. Well, he has to know at this point. He has to know the odds of him coming back are slim to none based upon everything that's happened and the fact that he hasn't exactly set the world on fire. I mean, he had a clear goal when he came in, which was, you know, stay the ship and then try and get fourth place. And he's not meeting that goal. And not only that, but he's not meeting it, and the team is looking pretty bad in not meeting it.
You know what? I would disagree with that. I think Sherwood has done exactly what he was brought in to do. I think, and we've said this before, I think ABB caused his own firing. Either he quit or just did stuff that made Levy fire him. They couldn't get their long-term guy. Spurs don't have enough money or prestige to get in a guy like, you know, Benitez to just take over for half a year without giving him a contract for next year. So they took Sherwood and they just said, don't make the rest of the season a dumpster fire, which it hasn't been. It's not been great. It hasn't been good, but Spurs aren't at an embarrassing point in the table. No team that is super embarrassing to finish above us will, except maybe Man United, which is pretty funny. But, you know, we're not in this super embarrassing situation. We're in a frustrating situation. But, you know, he's kept it from being a total fire. We're going to get to the summer. We're going to can him, and then we're going to go hire LVG or Frank de Boer or the ball boy at Red Bull Salzburg or whoever. And we're going to move on with our lives.
Well, I think that's a good point. But I think it still makes me wonder, though, if that was really the plan from the very beginning, then why make Sherwood anything but an interim manager? Why take the interim tag off him?
Give him authority within the locker room. And honestly, although ITK says Levy really likes him, so either trying to give him a chance or it's like you've done a lot of good work for the club. Here's something that will give you a nice payoff in the summer.
Okay, so here's the
Go ahead. Ben, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's also entirely possible that Sherwood came in and was Spurs' Pep Guardiola. It was a long shot, but if he was, get him locked down to another year's contract ahead of time rather than later.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they clearly do a lot of cocaine up at White Hart Lane, so why not, right? YOLO. That seems to be our transfer policy and our, you know, sort of general guiding philosophy. To dare is to YOLO.
Well, here's a hypothetical question then for you guys. Let's say that Sherwood is not retained, which I think we all kind of are secretly hoping, or not so secretly hoping, that he is not retained for next year.
Pretty sure Ashlock's had that tattooed on his forehead that he doesn't want Sherwood.
Do you think that Sherwood would stay with the club in some capacity? There's been, you know, ITK floating around that Sherwood might be interested in taking, like, the, you know, of canning Baldini and taking over the director of football position or staying within the organization at some level. Do you think that's a feasible option?
No, I think Levy would like to, and one thing I'll say nice about Sherwood, we've been talking about this in the writer's room this week, is he's done a halfway decent job of integrating youth relatively successfully into a first team, into a pretty high up the table first team in the Premier League. I think he's done a very good job with the youth team. I can totally understand why Levy would want to keep him there. By all accounts, he does an excellent job from the youth players and their families and people who evaluate Tottenham's youth setup, but Sherwood's made noise about, like, we had to fight Blackburn off from taking him as a manager. I think after this, like, Sherwood's going to go want to get a managerial job somewhere, and I don't blame him. Like, he's probably earned, you know, he's done well enough that he's probably earned the right to go take over a League One or Championship club. You know, I wouldn't want him as my team's manager, because I'd be skeptical about his ability to run a club that doesn't have Christian Eriksen and Jan Vertonghen and Sandro in it. But, you know, he's probably earned a shot at that level. You know, Steve McClaren kept getting jobs, so what's to lose, right? Ben, what do you think?
I agree. I'm with that thing you said. I mean, I think there's a lot to recommend to keeping him, but especially if the rumors
at a youth
of him
level, right? Not as a
Or in a back room or something. you know, I think he does have skills that are valuable. The rumors that he undermined AVB's tenure worries me a little bit. But I also agree that I think at this point Sherwood would want to go be a real manager somewhere.
I mean, he's certainly shown ambition since it. I mean, he hasn't been a shrinking violet since he took over.
Yeah, not at all. And I agree. He's earned a shot, and I wish him nothing but the best. I think he could be a good manager someday.
He's going to end up with Arsenal because he's been an Arsenal fan his entire life.
Oh, come on. Nah, he's going to end up at Nottingham Forest because, of course, we have to have a Sherwood in Nottingham Forest, right?
That is awful, and you should feel bad about yourself.
I regret nothing.
Also, he's going to buy Tom Carroll when he fails to hack it at Spurs next year when they're making their League One promotion push. Am I right, fellas? Am I right? Is that Tom Carroll's future?
Nope.
You're the worst.
Absolutely not.
Oh, my God. You people are the worst. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to say it. Alan Hutton will have contributed more to Spurs than Tom Carroll at the end of their career. Boom. Boom.
I will take that
just
bet.
Throwing it out there on the table.
Well, Tom.
I will take that bet.
Alan Hutton did help get us into the Champions League.
Boom. What has Tom Carroll ever done except
it's a high bar.
Brad Beadle in the face? Boom. Boom.
I got
okay. Moving on, I think it's time to get to some Wheeler Dealer Radio questions.
Did you want to talk about Van Hall coming in and what that would mean, or do you want to save that?
Again, do we really want to talk more about Van Hall? In fact, there might be a question on that. Maybe we should go to that question right now, Ben, since you can't wait and you're trying to undermine my hosting duties, since you
That's
can't
right.
wait. You I'm want the... to talk about that? You want to go to Outzen's question? How do you think and how would you like us to play under Van Hall? Would you like to do that? Would you want to talk about that? I didn't ask what you thought, Dustin. I'm talking to Ben. Ben, would you like to do that? Would you like to answer that question right now since you can't wait for me to get there on my own? Is that what you would like to do?
No, I'd like to talk to Kevin McCauley and have you sacked, and then I'll take over the hosting duties next week, and then we'll cover it.
That's not going to happen. Who will Kevin talk about with wrestling with after that? So, how do you think and how would you like us to play under Van Hall, Ben, since you're such an eager beaver about this question?
Well, in my defense, you had brought up the rumors of Van Hall taking over.
Answer the question! Answer the question!
So, to give a little primer on LVG, he is a very much a devotee to the classic Dutch system of playing football. You know, possession-based, everybody works hard for the team, a lot of fluid interchange. If we have the ball, they can't hurt us. That kind of mentality, you know, which is very much the ethos that Spurs started playing in the 50s and 60s. That is our reputation for being such an exciting side. And he implemented it to great effect at Barcelona and Ajax and Bayern Munich. And that's the style of play we're going to get from Van Hall. To criticize, I guess, a little bit, you know, like AVB, he's very dogmatic in his approach. He believes in a footballing philosophy, and he's not going to waver from that. You know, he's not going to play boring, pragmatic football against Man City if that's what it's going to take to get a result. He's going to play the possession-based game that he wants to play come hell or high water. Which I'm okay with. You know, I don't think, again, there's anything wrong with AVB's dogmatic approach. It was just the wrong dogma, or at the very least, the wrong implementation of his ideas. You know, guys, if you're looking for a model of how he'd want to play, Pep Guardiola played under Van Hall and cites him as an influence in how he manages, and that's the kind of team you're going to get. Obviously, we're not going to be as good as Barcelona or, you know, Bayern Munich, but that's the general idea, is total football. We keep the ball, pass, 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 move, 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 and score a bunch of goals. The other really good thing about Van Hall is he is very much the kind of guy who will make the most of the players at his disposal. He's not going to come in and say, I need £100 million to revamp the squad. He's going to see what pieces he has, and he's going to move them around to best fit his system. His big thing is, you know, passing the ball, and so that means we need a passing midfielder. So probably Tom Carroll, but
boo.
But if not,
I was just thinking Tom Carroll sounds like a perfect fit for this kind of offense. But
sounds
go on.
Like a perfect fit. But it's also entirely possible that he takes Christian Eriksen or Lewis Holtby and turns them into that deep-lying playmaker that he wants.
Oh, boy, I haven't seen enough of that failed experiment this year.
But, you know, it's been a failed experiment, sort of. I mean, we haven't really seen that happen at Spurs. But you look at a guy like Bastian Schweinsteiger, who, when Van Gaal took over at Bayern, Schweinsteiger was like David Bentley. He was a no-pace winger with really good delivery. And Van Gaal said, you know, fuck that. I'm going to turn you into the best central midfielder in the world. And then he did. So he definitely has that ability to see what players' talents are and how best to adapt them to a role in his system. And I think we have enough talent at this team that he can pick up the pieces and shape them into something that's going to be really effective.
So I want to bounce off this for a sec. We'll come back to Van Gaal. But are we, and I'm not trolling here, it's a genuine question, are we betting an awful lot of our hopes next year on a guy on a sort of underwhelming championship team this year in Tom Carroll?
No. I think Tom Carroll is obviously suited for the role and that's the position he plays and plays it fairly well.
Is he suited for playing at the level we need him to, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, that's certainly a question, and the answer might be no. But we also have guys like Gylfi Sigurdsson, who's shown ability to play in that role. Christian Eriksen, who's been able to play in that role. Lewis Holtby, who's been able to play in that role.
Lewis Holtby has not been able to play in that role successfully.
Well, he has not at Spurs, but he has.
Yes, fair enough.
So I think there are people, you know, Nabil Bentaleb, there are guys on this team who can pass the ball. And I think Van Gaal will set them up to maximize their ability and protect them as needed. You know, we saw Brendan Rodgers this year turn Steven Gerrard into a deep-lying playmaker. And he has no pace, very little defensive work rate at this stage in his career, and he's flourished. And so I think when you have a competent manager with a strong plan and talented players at your disposal, you can get them to adapt to the roles you need. And I think LVG will be able to do that. And, you know, while Tom Carroll is the most obvious candidate just from a strictly this is the position he plays perspective, I don't think we're pinning all of our hopes on him, because I think there's enough talent in the squad that LVG will find someone to play the role he needs.
Okay. So bouncing off of LVG, D-Train asks, would you take Pochettino, however it's said, if we can't get Van Gaal or De Boer?
You know, Pochettino, I'm a little dubious about him, and it's maybe a little bit irrational of why, but I don't think Southampton's turned into a pretty good side under him, under his leadership. I don't think they're as good of a side as what they potentially could have been. You know, I think his style of play could probably work for Spurs, and surely, you know, if he comes over to Spurs, we might be able to poach a couple of players along with him that would be a good addition to the side. He would not be my first choice. I think I'd rather see someone like Van Gaal or you know, even the coach at Salzburg, Roger Schmidt, who we've talked a little bit about in the chat room recently. And has taken Salzburg and has really turned them into a pretty darn good side. Pochettino would not be a bad manager by any means, and I don't mean to minimize his potential impact with Spurs, but he would not be my first choice.
First of all, when we're talking about Schmidt, let's be real. We're not taking a gamble on a manager in the Austrian league, not after ABB. Second of all, with Pochettino, my problem is, and this might be short-sighted, I can't get the bad taste of his sort of mediocre tenure in Spain out of my mouth. So I would be that's where I would be reluctant to get him.
I don't know a lot about his tenure in Spain, but from what I understand, I believe there were a lot of problems outside of his control. But that said, I think he's put together a really good Southampton side from parts that are a lot worse than the players he has at Spurs. The biggest concern for me is, and I don't know how much control he has over transfers, but his buys this summer of Wanyama and Pablo Osvaldo was basically just flushing money down the toilet. I mean, Wanyama has been okay and could get good, but Osvaldo was just a huge waste of money.
Yeah. And who could have seen that coming?
But that said, you know, for Southampton, taking a punt on £11 million on a guy who was one of the best strikers in Serie A last year, you know, it was not a bad money ball move. It's just there were a lot of obvious reasons why it wouldn't work, and unfortunately for them, it didn't. That said, again, I don't think we need a huge squad overhaul. I think we have a lot of talent in this team, and we just need somebody to get the best out of it. And I think if you look at the side Pochettino has put together at Southampton, they play very well. They all play for each other and work hard for the team and play a good attacking and strong defensive formation that I think would translate well to Spurs. You know, and we've seen guys like Martinez and Rodgers come from mid-table to bad sides who punched above their weight and have translated that to really good success at bigger clubs. Now, we've also seen David Moyes go to Manchester United with the exact opposite result. So it's obviously not a guaranteed blueprint for success. But I think if we miss out on our top targets, we could do a lot worse than him.
Okay. I'm still skeptical, but that is just me. So from RB Baker, we have a two-part question. While the season's been panned as a failure, if the team wins out, they will go ahead of last year's point total, yet could possibly finish position lower in the table. Should the fact that be something to consider when thoughts of the season are brought up, and is the failure to do much against the current top four a bigger harbinger than doing fairly well against everyone else? He gives some statistics there, but this is a statistics-free podcast, at least for tonight. My initial hot take on this would be that numbers are stupid, and Spurs should have scored more this year. I think those belie. Maybe it does speak to what Dustin was talking about earlier, that the bottom of the league is just worse this year. Maybe it also speaks to, I think we've had a weird year, and we should probably have done a little bit worse against the bad sides and a little bit better against the good sides. So I have no idea. I think it shows that this is a team with either a broken or no system, and they have players good enough to beat bad teams and not good, and they don't have a good enough system to beat the good teams. I think it just speaks to that. I think the season can be panned a failure, not necessarily in our point total, but just in that with United falling out of the top four, with Arsenal admittedly having a delayed implosion, this is again another huge opportunity for us in the way that Chelsea falling out a few years ago was, and we haven't really been able to capitalize on it. And in that way, it is a failure. Not necessarily anyone's fault in particular, other than the managers, but, you know, that is what it is. Ben?
Yeah, well, for the second part of that question, I think we touched on that earlier. You know, we have good players, and I think the fact that we did well against bad sides shows that, and the fact that we did bad against good teams speaks more to a lack of managerial tactical nous than anything. I think this season is definitely a failure by any metric. I mean, yes, you know, it was always going to be tough to replace Bale and, you know, bet in seven new signings, and all of that early hype about a possible title side was a little ridiculous. But
you're making me so sad thinking back to those days.
But in terms of the points total, I think that's really irrelevant, and that speaks a lot to the stratification of the league. You know, last season we got our highest points total ever, and we finished in fifth. This season we could top that and finish in sixth or seventh. So, you know, you can't look at points in a vacuum, because points are only relevant to the extent that they relate to your competition. Your hot stat take from Michael Cayley this week. We were talking earlier about Manchester City, and they could potentially finish on 88 points, with two draws and the rest wins, or 87 points. No, that's backwards.
This is what happens when you bring up stats.
God damn it. The point is they could finish on 88 points or 87 points. And in one scenario, they draw twice but finish with 88 points. And in the other scenario, they lose once but finish with 87 points. No, backwards.
You're the worst. Okay, you are the worst.
Let me start over.
You are the worst.
I can get a good look at a bull's ass if I stick a T-bone stick.
We're
done with numbers.
This is a good trivia thing. This is a trivia question in the chat room today.
Tell me what your gut says about Spurs for the rest of the season.
All right, my gut says I can get a good look at a T-bone steak by sticking my head up a bull's ass, but I'd rather take the butcher's word for it.
I'm going to finish Ben's point for him. The point was that City is better off finishing in 87 points than 88 points, because if they finish in 88 points, essentially it meant that because they play Liverpool, Liverpool could finish ahead of them at 88 points by two. But if they finish at 87 points, it means they drew, didn't drop points against Liverpool, and so they probably win the league with 87 points, but not with 88 points. Fun trivia fact. Now, what was the question again?
The point is that a points total is irrelevant in a vacuum, because it's only relevant to the extent that it relates to your competitors. So Man City could finish with fewer points and win the league. That's better than finishing with more points and finishing second, which is a very real scenario for Man City right now. I'm sorry, okay. Michael, I ruined your statistical hot take.
But it was a very good one. As far as Spurs being a failure, just for fun, I went back onto our Google Docs for a preseason. All of the writers went and predicted the table. And for the record, I think I was the only one who predicted that Fulham would get relegated this year, so I'm kind of proud of that. With the exception of one, I think it was Ed, all of us had predicted that Spurs would finish at minimum fourth. That was the goal. That was the expectation, was that.
In our defense, those picks were made at the point where Arsenal had not signed anyone. But yes, you're right. You're right.
The idea was that, okay, sure, we sold Bale, but we got all these great players in, and so, you know, we really should be doing well, and Champions League qualification is the minimum expectation. And obviously that didn't happen. So by that metric, yeah, this season is a bit of a failure. I think in my mind, it feels more like a failure, less because of where we're going to end up in the table, because we're still going to have a decent, unless we completely implode at the end of this season, we're still going to end up in a decent table position relative to, you know, the quality of our club. But it's more that we just have not looked that good doing it. And just the kind of football that we have played has been, for the most part, dour. And that's what really hurts the most to me, is to see the kind of football that we played both under ABB and under Sherwood, seeing that it's not the kind of football that we want to play. So that's where I'm disappointed, and that's actually where I have the most hope for the future, because I believe in this group of players. I believe that with the right system that they're going to look better and they're going to improve next year. And I don't think it's due to the fact that we have crap talent like some fans do. I think it's just the fact that we haven't had a system that works and a manager that gets the best out of the talent that we have. So, I mean, I'm hopeful for the future, but I don't think there's any way that we can look at this season and say that this wasn't a missed opportunity.
Womp, womp.
Yeah, that's very Spurs. Most Spurs answer ever, I think, because, gosh. This season kind of stinks.
It's pretty much been the worst. Let's see. One last question before we go. Is Tim Sherwood our Pep Guardiola?
Well, no, obviously next not, question. Because he's not very good.
LOL. Yes, Tim Sherwood is not our Pep Guardiola. First of all, he has too much hair. Second of all, his suits are too big.
Third Plus, I don't all, think Pep Guardiola would ever be caught wearing a gilet.
A gilet. Can't we just call it a vest? Like, for God's sake.
So here's a good one from Burke Spurs or Burke Spurs. I don't know.
Oh, thanks, Greg. I didn't realize you were hosting.
Well, you said one last question, but you picked a shitty question.
Oh, well, okay. What's your question, Greg?
The question is, would Everton finishing fourth ahead of Arsenal truly be detrimental to us? I honestly couldn't care less and would love to see Arsenal miss out on top four. Greg, what's your hot take on this?
I think I'm far more skeptical of how much has been strengthened Everton than everyone else here. I don't think they're going to – I think they'll be able to strengthen their squad, but not in a way that would really screw us over. We all remember what happened last time they made the top four. I don't think they can keep Lukaku. I don't care if they make the Champions League, because the money they would take to keep Lukaku would be – I think it would be more than group stage money, but they can't count on group stage money. I mean, they'll be playing in a playoff. You know, I don't know. It'd be interesting. I think we've wondered for a few years. I maintain that, like, if Arsenal had missed out on top four in any of the last couple of years, I think they would have had a real crisis there. I think they would have overreacted to it. And they would have had real problems with keeping some of their players or bringing new players in.
Do you think that would still happen?
I don't know. I don't think Mesut Ozil got kicked out of Real Madrid, and it wasn't just because of Bale. I think some of it was a bad attitude, according to Mourinho, which is Mourinho, and I know Mourinho is Mourinho, but they got rid of him when Ancelotti was there, so something was up with him. I don't see a lot of those players, particularly Ozil, being happy in the Europa League. Which is what would happen to them. I don't know. I think it would depend. I don't think that would really cement Everton. I think that Everton would have to do it one or two times. It certainly wouldn't be great for us, but, you know, I think the Schadenfreude I get out of watching Arsenal miss would make it worth it.
Yeah, my
Dustin,
hot sports,
what do you think?
Yeah, my hot sports take on this. This is my prediction.
You're the
here.
Worst, Ben. You're the worst.
I think Arsenal's going to lose to Wigan in the FA Cup semifinals. I think they're going to tank and finish in fifth place, 1 point behind Everton and fall out of Champions League. St. Tottenham's Day will come, but we won't care because we'll be too busy laughing at Arsenal after they fire Arsene Wenger this summer.
Here's the thing. Arsenal's 5 points above us. Am I right about that?
I have no idea.
They're not that far ahead of us. Now I'm curious.
Yeah, they got a game or two in hand, don't they? They have no. They are 5 points ahead of us at the moment.
So they're 5 points. Everton are 4 points. Like, I don't think we're going to finish top four, but it would just require those two teams doing us a favor. Everton has a really hard schedule for the rest of the year. Arsenal can't beat anyone these days. And Everton do have a game in hand over us, though, so that's the trick there. But, you know, I don't know. We've blown bigger leads than that.
Wouldn't that just be great? Oh, man. Yeah, but my pipe dream is that Everton finishes fourth, Arsenal finishes 1 point below, and they also lose to Wigan again in the FA Cup, because that would just be epic.
Your pipe dream is that we finish out of the Champions League?
No, my pipe dream is that let me rephrase. Just take out the part about the pipe dream and just, you know, if we have no chance of getting to the Champions League place, which I don't think we do, then at least we can, you know, all have a good laugh at Arsenal, because that's just a lot of fun.
Yeah. I don't know. It's ugh.
How would you feel if Arsenal won the FA Cup but dropped out of top four?
That'd be awful, because then they would have finally won a trophy, and we can't have that.
You know, I don't know. On a purely academic level, I'd love to see that offseason. Because on the one hand, they'll have addressed the trophy. But on the other hand, the disaster of not – I mean, think about that. I mean, they were a legitimate title contender at the new year. And they, you know, if we had Gareth Bale, I'd feel pretty good about overtaking them. Like, I mean, they're not in a good place right now. And if they miss out on top four, like, even if they win a trophy, that could be – that could be the end of Arsene Wenger, considering where they dropped from. I don't know.
I think a trophy might actually save him, even if they finish outside of the top four.
You know what? Most years I would have agreed with you, but they were leading the league until, like, mid-January, early February, and now they might not finish in the top four. Like, that's really bad. Like, that's really bad. They don't even have, like, a United-esque Champions League run to, like, point at. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, the FA Cup could very well be a farewell trophy for Arsene Wenger.
Now, the question is, does that work out well for Arsenal or poorly? My nightmare is they get Klopp, and that terrifies me.
I don't know. I don't think Klopp would ever leave Dortmund except for, like, you know, one of the really, really, really big teams.
Arsenal's a bigger team than we realize because they haven't spent in a while. And, as you know, I don't know if it's Klopp. I don't know. If it's not Klopp, I'm not as worried about it. But that's the thing that worries me, if they just, like, get a manager who fixes their shit, as opposed to Wenger, who just lets it slowly decay. In arson we rust. So, yeah, I think that's a cheery topic to end on. Ben, do you have any thoughts on this before we go?
Nope, I think that's it. So for Wheeler Dealer Radio...
For Wheeler Dealer Radio, I'm the man. To be the man, you've got to beat the man. I am Skipjack. I have been joined by my lovely two hijacking co-hosts. Say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye, everyone. Thanks. Yep.
I'm your host, Lennon's Eyebrow, and thanks for joining us this week.
And I'm your co-host, Uncle Menno, and next week we will be on a Skipjack-free podcast, and we will be taking all of your questions all about professional wrestling. And
it's so funny because I've stopped recording like a few seconds ago, so keep on talking.